Today's reading is from the book of Exodus. Moses came down from Mount Sinai. As he came down from the mountains with the two tablets of covenant in his hand, Moses did not know that the skin of his face shone because he hadn't been talking to God. When Aaron and all the Israelites saw Moses, the skin of his face was shining, and they were afraid to come near him. But Moses called to them, and Aaron and all the leaders of the congregation turned to him, and Moses spoke with them. Afterward, all the Israelites came near, and he gave them a commandment. He gave them in commandment all the Lord had spoken to him on Mount Zion. When Moses had finished speaking with them, he put the veil on his face. But whenever Moses went in before the Lord to speak with him, he would take the veil off until he came out. And when he came out and told the Israelites what he had been commanded, the Israelites would see the face of Moses. Then the skin of his face was shining, and Moses would put the veil on his face again until he went in to speak with him. The word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
The Holy Gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ, according to Luke. Jesus took with him Peter and John and James and went up on the mountain to pray. And while he was praying, the appearance of his face changed and his clothes became dazzling white. Suddenly they saw two men, Moses and Elijah, talking to him. They appeared in glory and were speaking of his departure, which he was about to accomplish at Jerusalem. Now Peter and his companions were weighed down with sleep, for since they had stayed awake, they saw his glory and the two men who stood with him. Just as they were leaving him, Peter said to Jesus, "Master, it is good for us to be here. Let us make three dwellings, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah," not knowing what he had said. While he was saying this, a cloud came and overshadowed them, and they were terrified as they entered the cloud. Then from the cloud came a voice that said, "This is my son, my chosen, listen to him." When the voice had spoken, Jesus was found alone, and they kept silent, and in those days told no one of any of the things they had seen. The Gospel of the Lord.
Two things that don't happen as a result of this story. One, Jesus doesn't run around from here on telling people how he was transfigured on the mountain and how he was changed and maybe glowed in the dark. "Hey guys, I was glowing in the dark and it was so cool." That doesn't happen. And the other thing is that you and I are not offered the same promise when the voice comes out of the clouds and says, "This is my son, listen to him." I mean, think about that. Wouldn't that be cool if we had a voice that told everyone else to listen to us? I would love to have that voice following me around, you know, and I would walk into the room, like here, and the voice would say, "Listen to him." Wouldn't that be great? And then you would have to. And then you'd have to do what I say. I want a voice like that, but it's not going to happen. I mean, that's not part of the promise. And so, yeah. All right. So today, this is the last Sunday of Epiphany, and always on the last Sunday of Epiphany, we hear one or another version of the story of the Transfiguration. So let me give you a little bit of a background on this particular version of the story. Peter, John, and James, who have been taken up to the mountain with Jesus, and they have this weird encounter, have already witnessed the raising of Jairus' daughter, and they're a little weirded out by that. And then, following that, they get to participate in feeding, our best guess would be around 15,000 people with a basket of bread and a couple of fish. And they're a little freaked out by that. And so they're already losing it a bit on the way up the mountain. And then, as the author tells us, and this is one of the big differences in this scene from either the Gospel of Mark or the Gospel of Matthew, what the author says in the Greek is that that Jesus' face became other. He's not metamorphosed, is the Greek term, because, as we pointed out in previous Sundays, the Gospel of Luke is addressed not to a group of Jewish people who are trying to figure out how to follow Jesus. This story, along with its sequel, the Acts of the Apostles, is addressed specifically to a Gentile Hellenistic audience. And this author does not want to confuse Jesus with some Greek god who gets metamorphosed, you know, typical in the story. And so what the story tells us is his face became other. And if Peter, John, and James weren't already freaked out enough, now they're losing it. I mean, it's even worse than the loss of control that we have here at St. Peter's, Terry. I mean, they're right over the edge, right? And so what do? I think what any of us would do, they clam up. I mean, Jesus doesn't have to tell them, don't say a word. They're already so freaked out. This is one of those moments they're just going to take to the grave. They're not going to tell anybody because they figured no one would believe it anyway. And that brings up the point that nowhere else in the Gospel of Luke or the Acts of the Apostles is this moment referenced. It never comes up again. It seems to be one of these standalone moments. And then it's over, and everybody moves on. If this story were written in Hebrew, which some have imagined, there would be a play on words embedded in the story. When it tells us that, where is it? Da-da-da-da. Oh yeah, Peter and his companions were weighed down with sleep. But since they had stayed awake, they saw Jesus wait, would be the word in Hebrew, kavod, which can be translated glory or weight or heaviness or a weighted argument or gravitas. And the ancient ones would have gone, oh yeah, we get what's going on here. And again, Jesus doesn't metamorphose like in the other stories. His face becomes other. And then these two guys show up, and we're not told how Peter, John, and James know who they are, but they seem to, that it's Moses and Elijah, and they're chatting up Jesus, but the focus keeps coming back on Jesus, as if to suggest that this transfiguration that takes place and the sonship that goes with it, as far as Jesus is concerned, is completely in line with the ancient tradition, both with Moses and with Elijah. So there's no one's getting converted here. No one's becoming Christian, right? From being Jewish or whatever else they were, it's this deep and abiding sense that he stands among the ancient ones, and that's an important a part of this story. So, what do we do with this? Today we hear a lot this word glory. Again, it could be translated as weight or gravitas. And it's something that belongs to God. And according to the ancient tradition, it belongs pretty exclusively to God. So, I would suggest today, let's leave it where it belongs and allow glory and transfiguration to be God's purview rather than ours. Instead, take note of, again, what doesn't happen in the story. It never comes up again, it's never referenced, and if you read along in the story, nothing changes as a result of the transfiguration. And yet, the life of Jesus, the teachings of Jesus, the work of Jesus, and the death and the resurrection of Jesus all invite change. So how do we imagine that? Well, yesterday I was speaking about this passage with my brilliant, talented, intelligent wife. She came up with a couple of other adjectives I won't go into. And she said, you know, and so I'm quoting her, I had to write it down so I wouldn't forget it. She said, transfiguration seems to happen at a distance and in an instant, whereas transformation, this change that you and I are invited to engage as a result of the life and the teachings of Jesus, transformation happens in proximity over time. Let me say that again, because I just went, wow. And I asked her if she wanted to preach this sermon. She quickly left the room and went back to her art. Transformation happens in proximity over time. In other words, and I believe this to be true, it certainly speaks to my experience, the transformation that I have gone through and continue to go through requires that I be in relationship. It's not something that's going to happen in a vacuum. And as far as relationship goes, that would be with God, Jesus, the Spirit, however you want to imagine all that, relationship with myself and relationship with you, relationship with the other, relationship with the stranger, relationship with the enemy, relationship with creation, relationship basically with all things and all people. Transformation happens in proximity over time. I came across a couple examples of this just in the last few days. Once again, from one of my favorite sources of daily meditation, Eduardo Galeano is a wonderful Uruguayan poet who died back in 2013, and he did a daily reflection book called Children of the Days, and this comes from February 29th, and it's entitled Not Gone with the Wind. Today's day tends to drop off the calendar, but every 4 years it finds its way back. It is the strangest day of the year, but there was nothing strange about this day in Hollywood in 1940. In routine fashion, on February 29th, Hollywood gave nearly all of its awards, 8 Oscars, to Gone with the Wind, which was a long sigh of nostalgia for the good old days of slavery. He goes on, thus Hollywood confirmed its ways. 25 years earlier, its first blockbuster was Birth of a Nation, an anthem of praise to the Ku Klux Klan. fast forward 60, 70 or more years to 2018 with the appearance of a movie entitled Green Book. Who has seen that movie so far? This is your homework for the week. Green Book, I'm told, won bunches of something. Oscars, awards, okay. And for good reason. It is based on a true story of an African-American classically trained pianist who, for one reason or another, decides that he wants to go on tour in the Deep South. And this is in the early 1960s, yes? Okay. True story. And he needs a driver. And he ends up hiring this Italian mafia bouncer. And the two of them start just driving each other mad throughout the movie. But as the story unfolds and they're traveling around the South and this African-American classically trained pianist comes head on with the racism, not just of the South, but the racism that's embedded in American culture, and this Italian mafia bouncer begins to help him navigate that. It is an astounding story, and one that is worth viewing. And it's, in my estimation, one of the best examples of how transformation works in proximity over time. I won't give the movie away, but be sure to watch it. It's probably going to come out on DVD relatively soon. It was in the movies, in the theaters, and then it went away. I mean, it was in and gone in like 2-3 weeks, but then it came back. So it may be back in the theaters as we speak. It is well worth the view. The kind of transformation that you and I are invited to partake is the kind that requires proximity, relationship, and it takes time, sometimes longer than we'd prefer. I mean, and I'm one of those guys who has suffered from this fantasy. I don't know if it came from my religious upbringing or what, but there was this idea that got lodged inside of me that, oh, God has this glory, and one of these days he's going to bestow that glory upon me, and then I'm going to run around glowing in the dark, and then, of course, I can brag about it and make sure that everybody notices just how much that is, and then you'd have to pay attention to me and listen, and everything would be good. Everything would just be wonderful, and everything would go my way, and I would be completely in control, Terry, totally in control. It hasn't worked out too well. Rather, what I've been invited to participate in is what we're talking about all along, which is this transformation undergoing by the grace of God and in relationship with one another, that we become more godlike and find ourselves deeper and deeper in union with the divine, one step at a time, one breath at a time, one day at a time, one encounter at a time. And sometimes it feels a little much, and sometimes it seems like an awful lot of work. And, oh, by the way, what are we going to get out of this? What's, you know? And the whole idea of dying and going to heaven, well, you know, that's a pig in a poke. So what's going to happen, really, right? And I think the answer is that that you and I, we just get to be together, and we get to be in this thing together, changed and being changed by our relationships. And if you have any questions about the ins and outs of that, I'll refer you to my lovely, talented, brilliant wife. And with that, the people said, take a nice deep breath.